All right, let's get started. I'm a little dismayed to even see as many of you here, but I imagine there's as many people here with equals the number of motives for being here. I can tell you what today's presentation ain't. It is not therapy. I can also tell you it is not the end-all to be-all to the subject. If I could just scratch the surface in the hour I have allotted to me, I would be a very happy gentleman. I can't do it. I've written something on the blackboard. I don't know if you can read it. I'll certainly read it out to you. And we'll be keen back and forth with that as we go through the presentation. There will be a question period at the end. Let me tell you what else I can't do. Everybody's been affected by this out in the audience. I can't reflect accurately your suffering. I know it's there. I'll have to do it inaccurately because I'm going to draw on 30 years of experience. And so what I'll be telling you is not the end-all to be-all of the suffering of a person. It is a composite of all the symptoms I've run into in 30 years and all the variations. My name is Jack Scruggs. I've been asked to do this by the church because like the rest of the world, we have the same number of problems within the church as we do out. Whether it's alcohol or whether it's abuse or you name the problems of society, we got them in just about the same amount and the same ratio as the rest of the world. We're trying to start to address those. And as we near the end, I'll tie this all together to, I'll just give the game away to the great abuser. And how it ties into that. I believe this is being recorded, just the audio. Okay. So if I take some time to explain something in sort of detail that I'll present up here, it's not because I don't think you're smart enough to see it or read it or understand it. It's for the sake of the recording. Any question to begin with? Good. All right. I give this presentation based on 30 years of experience. I'm a qualified mental health professional within the state of Oregon. I have a master's degree in psychology and one in the history of Christianity. They tend to dovetail, as a matter of fact. But anyway, I've written up here, the past is prologue. The past is prologue. Those are not my words. Those are the words of Bill Shakespeare. That means every morning when we get up, we are a composite of everything that's gone on in our life before that moment. And we can no longer deny that in terms of what is good in our life and what is bad, then we can deny the sun its right to rise in the east. It's going to be there. I've also written, tragedy is not destiny. Tragedies happen to all of us in various degrees. That is not your destiny. You can still, in almost all cases, as we heard today during the sermonette, you can still lead a productive life, a productive, happy life. That seems foreign to hear to people who have suffered from abuse, but it's true. You can still have a happy, productive life. We know the suffering. And we know the difficulty you're going to have and the work that you have to do, but it can still be done. And then I got John 10:10 written on the on this whiteboard. Can anybody quote that for me? Say again? No? That's a good one, though. Abundant life. Abundant life, yeah. I have come that you might have life and you might have it more abundantly. Okay, these three statements seem in contradiction, but they're all absolutely true. Okay? The past is prologue. You can't deny it. Tragedy is not destiny. It will not chart the course of your life unless you let it. The tragedy part. In fact, I have a theory. This is only a Scruggsian theory, and they run very cheaply across the marketplace. It's this. The first, when somebody comes to me for treatment of any kind of abuse, I usually tell them, why don't you go get anointed, first and foremost, for a couple of reasons. It's cheaper. It's quicker. And God is a very merciful God. But the theory is God lets us sometimes work through those very difficult times so we can gain the victory. So when we turn around and we feel much better and we've conquered this thing called abuse and we're ready to have a productive life and we know the cost it's going to cost us in terms of work and hardship, we can turn around and say, with God's help, I did it. I have a lot of people that will leave my office for the last time, and I'm as happy as they are. And what they'll say is, I did all the work, and you got all the money. I see a couple of you shaking your head. Yes, because... that's true. That's true. Anytime as a therapist, you're working harder than the client or the patient, you're working too hard. You're doing something wrong. Unfortunately, as it happens, they've got to bring that to themselves. So you never go to a therapist if the therapist is what you need and think that they have some sort of magic. Okay? It doesn't work. You've got work to do and it's going to be hard. It's going to be laborious to say the least. But it's so rewarding when you turn around and say, I know this was difficult, but with God's help, I did it. And please take responsibility for that. Take responsibility for all the hard work you've put in. Take responsibility for all the suffering you've done to get there. It's a wonderful trip. And that is the conclusion of the Scruggsian theory. We'll get back to more well-grounded information at this point. The Bible has a lot less to say about abuse than you think they would. And there's a real good reason for that. Among other things, God is a God of economy. He wrote us a book, a manual, and he said, well, do it right the first time, then you won't have to worry about fixing it. Okay? That was his desire, that we do it right the first time and we would not have to worry about any kind of treatment or any kind of suffering we'd have to do along those lines. The world has decided, and the God of this world has decided, they don't want to do it that way. And so here we are, okay, with a need for this type of outlook. What is abuse? I'm not going to give you any kind of clinical definitions because I don't know any, and I don't want to quote any sort of academic people, not because they don't know what they're talking about. I'll be incorporating much of the academic community. But just because I want to talk about abuse in more human terms. Abuse is loss. Abuse is loss. What do we lose? We lose a sense of security. We lose a sense of trust. We lose oftentimes a view to optimism. I know I, as a abuse survivor, often feel that way. I talk about my definition of an optimist. Well, I don't have one. What I have is a definition of a pessimist. That's somebody who just had a long talk with an optimist. So we lose that vital element that's so integral to Christianity, that optimistic spirit. We're here celebrating a holiday, or a series of holidays, series of days, because we're optimistic, right? Because something better is coming. Okay, and we can have that in our life as well. I wished I could tell you how easy it's going to be, but I can only tell you the opposite. We also lose something that's very vital, that the Bible talks about very eloquently, self-love. The ability to look at ourselves. I have, most of my clients cannot look in a mirror. That's been taken away from them. It's a loss of tremendous import. Because, and the fact, if you've suffered from this, you can walk into church services and you will swear up and down, everybody here is deserving of God's love, except me. And I'm somehow inferior to the rest of the people here. And after a while, you become almost a cosmic mistake. And you spend your life trying to hide the fact that you're a cosmic mistake. Let's just get down the open. I am an abuse survivor. Let's see what else. How many faults you want? I'll just give you one more. Alcoholic. Okay? And those two tend to go together from time to time. And they go together in twos. The alcoholic, you can have some that will never touch a stuff, and you can have some that will never put it down. Okay? And I'll show you something about that in the middle, in the moment. Okay? What I can't give you is a full therapeutic session within this hour, but we can talk about some of the things that affect you in several ways. One is if you've been affected by abuse. Two is if you've had to live with somebody that's been affected by abuse. And three is you just happen to live in a world and you keep running into these people with weird glitches in their personality. Many of those, it's because they've been abused. Memory. Memory loss is very common to abuse because it's so horrific. The human mind does something for us. It erases it out of our memory. I have people, so I'll just forget it. And they can very easily. There's gaps in my life I cannot remember. Here is the problem and the one we've got to confront. We can forget things. Those things will not forget us. That fear you have, and you need to lock the door every night or every moment you're in the house, comes from that lack of security, perhaps. That inability to look in a mirror. We've forgotten what caused it. Maybe it's just black shadows in your bedroom at night. But it'll never forget us. That's why the I'm just going to forget it and live my life method never works and simply leads to more suffering. Because it will not forget you. Because there's two kinds of memory. There's a cognitive memory. Naval shells have flat trajectories. I just happen to remember that. And there's an emotional memory. Emotional memory does not need to be brought to the surface of our cognitive memory to affect us, but it will. Let me tell you a story. My wife is one of 14 siblings. She has 13 brothers and sisters. And when I first met them, they had it's a wonderful family, absolutely wonderful family. And when I first met them, they invited me to go to meal with them. And I went, and I had to call my wife aside, and I said, Ruby, I can't do it. And she said, because we'd just been married. I'll have to tell you a quick story. My wife and I were, most of you know the story, but I'll tell you anyway. My wife and I met and were married in Vietnam. And we did this because the government then paid for our honeymoon in Honolulu and our visit to her parents. And then it was on to Paris, where we rented a nice little apartment right near the Eiffel Tower. How many people have been to Paris? Okay. You know where the Eiffel Tower is? The next street over is Rue de Suffren. The next street over is where we lived. But anyway, back to the table. And she says, why not? And I said, because, and I stopped. I thought, I don't know. I'm scared. And it's the first time I'd ever been confronted with this type of situation. And I thought, and I thought, and I thought, and I said, I got it. If I were to be hit when I was young, it was usually at the table. You little, I'm not going to fill in that blank, and a backhand. And she said, well, that's ridiculous. None of these people are going to hit you. I said, I know it's ridiculous, and I ain't taking any chances. Well, I went to work on that one. 7 years later, I sat down with them. I certainly don't want to see any hands, but does this ring any bells? I don't, Penny. Put your hand down. Okay. That's the kind of thing we need to confront. Okay? We need to confront the idea that there are fears in our life. There are things that are getting in our way. There are things that are standing in our path of success. And they come from that emotional memory. And it does not need the cognitive memory to be real. It just needs, you can tell by the symptoms what the problem is. Once I told you the logic of why I wouldn't sit at that table, it all at once, I'm going to guess, it made sense and it didn't make sense. Would that be accurate for most of you? Jack, they're not going to hit you. I ain't taking any chances either. And I've yet to be, when I left my home was the last time I was hit at the table. Which speaks volumes for my wife's patience. And everybody out there that know two of us would never blame her. I'm sure of that. I'll give you one thing that abuse does is steal that optimism and therefore steal our plans for success in a lot of cases. Why? We have been taught by our environment through the abuse that we're not worth much. So guess what? We live down to those expectations. We shoot low oftentimes in our ambitions. There is a small niche of opposite people who do the opposite and shoot high for success. But that's the outlier. That's of research. Most of us shoot low. And that's because that's what we have lost with the abuse. I had a cat when I was young, and we had an old wood stove. And that cat once sat on that hot wood stove. Never sat on that hot wood stove again. The problem was it never sat on a cold one either. Now, what do I mean by that story and how does it relate to abuse? What did it? It missed the opportunity of sitting quite comfortably, thank you, because it loved to sit on that stove well up to a point, you see. Because it gave a good view of the kitchen. But it never sat on that stove after that. It lost the opportunity, and that not much of an opportunity in a cat's life. And you'll keep in mind, of course, that dogs have masters, cats have staff. Right? Everybody on a cat knows that. Okay, so we do the same thing. We go through life shooting low, living down to our expectations or somebody else's expectations. And whose expectations were those? The abuser or abusers who convinced us through their conduct and therefore to ours that we were worth a little less. Taught us, or what we learned at least, that we were perhaps in some cases, and all too many, we were beyond God's redemption. Everybody else is deserving of God's love and His free gift of salvation. We're not sure about us. And so we sort of go at it in two ways. We turn into wonderful Pharisees. Why would that be? We want to earn it. And what's our chance of earning salvation? Huh? Somewhere around there. Exactly. But that's what we feel we have to do. And so we give it the old college try. and it never quite works. The other one is, we do have some success, then what happens? Huh? Sometimes that does happen. Most times that arrogance is nothing but a small facade, which you can puncture very easily. What often happens is the affirmation we receive from a success must be followed by yet another, even stronger affirmation of our worth. And if not, I'll use a technical term here, we feel like poo-poo. So if we have a real triumph, a legitimate triumph, I graduated with honors from college. If the next affirmation doesn't equal that, we feel worse than a failure. Does that sound familiar? Do you have a question? Can I have a request, sir? Don't look at my notes again. Yeah, exactly. I don't mean to be that facetious, gentlemen. But what we begin to do is sabotage our own successes. Because somehow we know deep down we don't deserve those. Is this beginning to feel and sound like the abused person is using a very poor form of logic? Let me assure you, it's a real one nevertheless. And those things I've been talking about and will continue to talk about are the premise for how we guide our life. Given that, what's our chances of success? Getting poor. And even if we achieved it, we'll sabotage ourselves. How many successful people have sabotaged themselves with alcohol? Yes, ma'am? Oh, I'll drink to that. And that's my problem I have. Okay? Yeah, so we begin to sabotage that life. Now, of all the supernatural beings, whose will is that carrying out? Satan. Whose will is that attempting to thwart? I know you don't believe it because I don't quite about my own life. But I decided to fake it till I make it. I'm going to trust God that He will, in fact, give me that worth and that love which I so desperately need. And this is where you need a checkup from the neck up. I can't feel it in my heart, or at least let me put it quite different. When 10 years ago, I couldn't feel it in my heart, but I knew in my head. Start there. Start with your prayer and Bible study. Read those verses, like this one, which applies to you just as well as it applies to anybody else. I have come that Jack, that Penny, may have life and may have it more abundantly. Start there. That's all you can do. You cannot, those emotions which are trying to defeat you, which Satan is very happy to introduce into your environment, has convinced you of, and you've been convinced. Start with that check up from the neck up. From here up, I know. Somebody quote me something from the first chapter of 2 Timothy that would affirm that. This is the good news about abuse. I know whom I have believed in. Can somebody find that? Find that verse. In the first chapter, you don't have to do it now. First chapter of, I think, 2 Timothy. And if I'm wrong, sue me. But it says, I know whom I have believed in. Okay, let's start with knowing. We will get to the feeling later. Okay? But fake it till you make it, because you know that's true. It's going to be true whether you feel it in your emotions or not. It's going to be true whether you live it or not. It's going to be true to the extent you put it in your life. And then after a while, I love sitting down with my wife's family now. It is a joy to me. It is a joy to me to pray now. And pray the prayer that David, Psalms 51, that David prayed when he had done something wrong. Not that you good people would ever need that prayer. Of course, I don't mean to imply that in the least. But I do from time to time. And I can read it now, and I can believe it. And I start with the belief up through here, and I've been able to work through other parts of my body, up to and including some of the emotional. Okay? So if I have nothing else, it would be two very simple messages. God loves you. And since you can't stop that, you may as well act like it's true. And know from the neck up that you've had a checkup. Okay? That's the most you can hope to do if you're just starting on this journey. If you've already started on this journey and you're having some success, you already know what I've just said. I'll tell you another couple that got real... Yes, sir. Oh, I don't know. Read it for me.
For this reason, I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep what I have committed to him until that day.
Okay, Second Timothy 1 what?
1:12.
Okay, for the recording, this is 2 Timothy 1:12. Read it for yourself. It's the knowing rather than the feeling, because getting to those feelings is sometimes difficult for us. The usual thing that's robbed too, especially with sexual abuse, is sleep. Oh man, I love sleep better than I love a good steak. And I get it about once a year. And I feel so good when I do. I'm so thankful when I do. Abuse is about loss. The journey back is about triumph. You've already had the loss, perhaps, or you've already seen the loss in somebody else, or you already know there is loss out there due to abuse. So you may as well get to the triumph. The problem of that is the triumph takes work and hurts. The denial, there are sort of three things we do when we come to abuse. One is denial. Oh, it's not that bad. Well, then I've had people come and give me $84 an hour and say it's not all that bad. And I'd say, why in the world are you giving me $84 an hour then? If it's not that bad. Diminution. Oh, it was just my uncle. I'll just stop it there, okay? We're not going to get into detail in this. Oh, it was just my uncle. Oh, it's just a family friend. And we say, wasn't that bad. Let me tell you something about abuse. The closer the abuse is to those that should be protecting us, the worse it is. I've had clients who were raped by a gang of Bedouins, and they came through it relatively unscathed. They didn't get away free. And I've had others who had inappropriate touching, who were suffering more deeply than perhaps I ever want to. Because the thing that's worse is the betrayal. The betrayal. What did Satan do to his office? He betrayed that office. We're going to start seeing these parallels with Satan and abuse very, very vividly as we go along. But this diminution is very, very, very common. Oh, I'm sorry, my mistake. Put your phasers on stun. How many Trekkies we have out here? How many people with Star Trek? Okay, put your phasers on stun, please. That diminution is supposed to relieve our suffering. It never quite makes it. It never quite gets there. Your body gets to decide the level of trauma that you are going to suffer. And you don't have much to say about that. But your psyche, or your, call it what you will, that part that is the essence of us will decide what kind, what level of trauma that you will endure. And it's usually tied somewhat, and not somewhat loosely, but somewhat, to the level of betrayal. Okay? It's also a way of controlling pain. Denial, diminution of the facts in your own mind or to others is a way of trying to say, it wasn't that bad, therefore I don't have to hurt that much. Isn't that wonderful? Doesn't work. It does not work, and we continue to suffer. So we may as well say, it would seem to me, and there we go from the neck up, it would seem to me this is my level of suffering by the way I'm doing this. I'm looking over my shoulder. How many times have I sabotaged my own dreams? Because somebody taught me I wasn't worth it, and I'm living down to their expectation. So it wasn't all that bad. I'm just, then why do I feel like this? Then, have you ever known anybody get so mad they ran their hand through a window? I'll tell you a story that sort of talks about why that usually occurs. I can tell you one reason. A lot of times we get so frustrated and so angry in this world and suffering so much that we do something as something similar or as stupid, run our hand through a window. The pain brought about by the window is preferable to the suffering we're doing outside of it. When we grab that bottle and realize that two things, alcohol works. You can't just say don't do it. It works. It relieves the pain. And you other people who've been ill affected by alcohol know that. But why do we do it? I'll take that hour and a half of relief. I don't get it normally anyway. I'll take that. And I'll pay for it tomorrow. Because it's preferable to what I have to go through. There again, we're going to have to say to ourselves what Paul said. And we're going to have to know it from our neck up, the love of God. And you wait. You wait. You're in for a thrill. You're in for a triumph. You're in for something so good. That first feeling that when you practice this, there's a lot more to it. This is not therapy, so don't think you can walk out of here and adopt a normal life, which you haven't been able to. I can't give you those tools. I'm not that good. But that triumph you get when you practice this and all at once, that was pretty good. That felt pretty good. Sitting down at that table with my wife's family, who I so admired and who were so puzzled by my conduct, was such a triumph. I could have eaten the whole turkey. I may have eaten the old turkey. I'm not sure. But I could have because of the feeling it gave me. That much of a triumph. You say that's an awful small portion to feel that good. Yes, it was, but I'll take it. Thank you very much. I don't get that many. And I've had more and more and more. Okay? It's a life journey. The end is beyond your lifetime when the complete healing comes. But it's better than what was. And that wonderful triumph. God didn't heal me immediately, but He gave me something better. A triumph I could own. A triumph I could digest. A triumph I could feel good about. And a God that I could even have even more confidence in beyond the wonderful words of 2 Timothy. And that felt good. That was a good day in my life. And I've had many more. So we actually run into the fact that we are living in an abused world. For those who think they haven't been abused, why are you here then? Because we're talking about getting rid of the abuser of this world. We all sitting here are victims of abuse. And we're here to celebrate the surety of the removal of that abuse and the abuser himself. Okay? You ever notice when they make God masculine, which I think is perfectly appropriate, but a lot of people out in the world who want to make God just God feminine, they never want to make Satan feminine. Why is that? I have no idea, but I thought if we're going to be equal about this thing, we ought to make them both equal. Okay. I see I've talked through a perfectly good hour. Huh?
35 minutes.
Oh! It started at 2:30. Oh my God. Because I was working up a good apology. Okay. I will promise you that we will leave a lot of times for some questions. But boy, thank you very much. Let me get that straight. Mickey's big hand is on. Why do we find more abuse now than we ever had? Now, let's be careful about that. Gathering data on abuse is very, very difficult. Gathering data on abuse in 1886 is even more difficult. So it's very difficult. But there's one reason, and one reason alone, and I'll weave in Satan very easily back into the theme here, that we have more abuse now than we've ever had. Who appears, these we do have stats on, who appears to do more abuse than any other single population? Now there's at least two answers to that. Stepdads. And once we say step, we're already talking about what?
A broken
family. That makes children within that marriage potential victims who are now more potential victims. Okay? Because what happens during a divorce? Who do the kids tend to blame? Say again. The answer is themselves. And they begin to see what I've said at the beginning. They begin to see that cosmic mistake which they've become. If I'd have been a better kid, my parents would still be together. Very, very common theme, even when not expressed verbally, and certainly, excuse me, not said to the parents. They're not going to tell that to the parents in many cases. Sometimes they will. Because they're trying to be better. And then they want the big three. They want love, worth, and acceptance. This is horrible. Those other colors are really not available to us. For those in the audio recording, I have a very poor whiteboard, which won't concern you anyway. So they begin to blame themselves, and then they set themselves up more. Please, separation and divorce happens. I would never judge anyone's. But the facts are that happens. Okay? So, all children want three big words. Love, worth, acceptance. Anything that interferes with those could set them up as potential targets for abuse. And there's plenty of people out there looking for kids who don't have this. That's their target. Children who are lacking love, worth, and acceptance. When are these three things sought the most? About what age? Yeah. Because they're becoming new beings. Once we become a sexual being, simply because of our physical maturation, we almost do a computer search. What all has went in to making us what we are. And we will discover both the cognitive memory and the emotional memory. And that's when you get your typical teenage behavior. Is when you have a cognitive dissonance between what you thought you were and actually what you're becoming because of previous abuse. I've got a lot of clients whose 7-year-old kid could not remember anything that happened to him. And the parent who errantly thought, boy, that's good. No. Yeah, that emotional memory, I don't like to use the terms subconscious simply because Sigmund Freud used it. Who I term sick man fraud. Okay? But then they have no... Who can they discuss that with? Who can they go to confide in? Their peers, which is a fairly bad audience to go to, but it happens. It happens probably to all of us. Secondly, here's another fact. When we have a divorce, the parent who ends up with the kids usually gets the brunt of the anger and can't understand why. And it's perfectly obvious why. Anybody want to take a stab at that one? The child is usually convinced the custodial parent will not leave them. They are not so sure about the other parent. Because the other parent's not there. And so blaming themselves, not feeling love, worth, and acceptance, they go looking. What are they looking for? Yes, but where do they find it? In what venues could they find it? Peer groups. You can run through the litany and most of them aren't very happy. But once again, we've got the saving grace of what we know as church members and what God promised through many places in the Bible. Certainly, John 10:10 and 2 Timothy 2. Huh? 2 Timothy 1:12. Thank you very much. Keep your lousy opinions to yourself. Thank you very much, Nathan. Yeah. Okay, so we call it the yeah, yes, ma'am.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I didn't get any of those, and yet my parents were married.
Uh-huh. It's not necessary to have a divorce, to have abuse, or to lack these. They can be emotionally absent. A father can come home and go to his computer. Okay. A mother can, here's the tough one. A mother can, after a trauma like that, can ask the child to help bear their emotional burden. This is terrible. Something's happened to me. I found it necessary to get a divorce, and you're here with me. I want you to help me carry this burden. They'll never say it out loud. They'll never admit it, but it's there. It happens in spades. What are we going to do about it? Just what I said previously. We'll come back to the wonderful good news that we have available for us. From here up, we can know that God's love applies to our children as much to us. It applies to us, and we can at least believe the word on the page of your Bible. If you can't feel it yet, that's too bad. You will get there. Those triumphs will come. And when they come, you'll thank God. You can't admit this now. You can't know it now. You'll thank God for the work you had to do. You will see. You may not ever agree with it. You'll see the benefit of Him not healing you using the method you wanted. But that all at once it hits you. Yes, I see it. I'm loved as well. I don't believe it in my heart, but I know it's true. And so, once again, those wonderful words of 2 Timothy 1:12 come to mind. I know whom I have believed in and am persuaded. I have seen people, and I loved it, strut out of my office. I did all the work, you didn't do it. And I'd say, you're absolutely right, and nobody could be more thrilled. And they still hurt, and they still have those emotions, but they're on their way. They're on that road. They're feeling that triumph. And as long as they keep loyal to God, He's going to keep loyal to them. And if they decide not to be loyal to God, He's still going to be loyal to them. You can't make it go away. People that don't believe that God's sacrifices for you, you can't make it go away. You may as well believe it. You may as well swallow it hook, line, and sinker, because it ain't going away. And the sooner you get on that wonderful pathway of those small triumphs. What was my triumph? Sitting in a chair with 15, counting me, people. And beaming like a peacock. Maybe it was peacock we had instead of turkey. But anyway, whatever it was good. But I felt that triumph, that God, all-merciful God, allowed me. And allowed me to go through all that work to get it. To enjoy it, to digest it. That if He had healed me, I don't think it would have been a good idea. Don't tell Him that. I want the next healing. But having to go through that work and feeling that triumph was such a wonderful piece of my life that I'm not giving that up for anything. But like I say, the banality of it, I'm sure I can't convince you of the efficacy of, I enjoy words, and I worked in two I don't get to use very often right there, so banality and efficacy, okay, was so worth the journey. Now let's go back for a moment to our children. They need this. They don't need a home without a center of gravity. What is the best center of gravity any of us have in here? God is our center of gravity. But it happens sometimes. Okay? And there's no way in the world anyone can ascribe blame to those situations in which you end up with a family that's not being a nurturing family. As a father, I played it's unwarranted flattery to say I played the mixed reviews. But I tried, okay? And I did gain some triumphs there, too. That was in my era of small triumphs where I could actually show love, worth, and acceptance. A little late in the game, but I still did it, and I did it in time, okay? So I'm trying to be honest with you without being so self-disclosing that this turns into my own private therapy. I don't want it to do that. But I want you to know there are ways I can understand beyond the academic training that I have, that I've had, okay? I know what it feels like. When I come across somebody, never make the mistake, if you're dealing with somebody that's hurting, never make the mistake of saying, I know how you feel. Might as well say, I diminish your pain. What you can say is, I don't know how you feel, I know what pain feels like, and I know how I felt when I had pain. Suffering is a very, very lonely endeavor. It is no great feat of imagination to see that Satan would attack our homes, because that knocks down so many pins. Just by attacking one thing, so many pins for our society falls out of place. Divorce, separation are just one way. A family in crisis, not being able to nurture, is another. Now, if some of us are starting to feel a little squeamish, starting to hit close to home, I'm sorry, that happens. And I don't mean to rub it in. I'm just talking about abuse and the abuser, who we have the wonderful privilege of coming here for a week and looking at Satan with our best nanny, nanny, nanny. Okay, so may as well start. I don't care where you are, the depths of suffering or making your own progress, we can begin to enjoy more and more of those triumphs that start up here, work their way down to our feelings, and as soon as they hit, the joy. And your quotient to love God goes up about 200% really quick. Because then you're so grateful that it's like you have a good checkup at the dentist when you're 23 and say, thanks, Mom, for not buying me that ice cream and that candy I wanted. Okay. It's almost that caliber where we thank a loving God for saying, no, you need this triumph all by yourself. I'll give you the tools and you'll be grateful to me, but you need the triumph. Okay. So we've talked about despair. We've talked about triumph. Despair is there. Despair hurts. Suffering is part of the process. I wished it were not. I wished I had another way of counseling people without introducing that discomfort. I would grab it in a New York minute. I don't. But I know one thing. God is merciful. God will be there when you're ready. So please, since it's going to happen anyway, since God's going to love you, since God wants to offer you His salvation, despite the suffering you've done, would you go ahead and believe it anyway? And then when you believe it anyway, you may as well live like you believe it anyway. And all at once, one day, you'll sit in a chair with 14 other people and think that you've won a major battle in a cosmic war. And guess what? You have. Questions? Yes, sir.
Abuse takes many forms. It could be historical, based on childhood rearing or historical relationships or something. But recently, there seems to be abuse in the church and families that appears to be caused by some sort of demonic activity. You can have spouses or whatever that are giving abuse that's spiritual, mental, verbal, even physical at times. And the question arises for the church member, what do those people do about this type of situation? Do they just endure it? Do they try to please God? Because if you do that, He'll even make the enemies be at peace. Or is it something like the Apostle Paul, who got kicked by a demon every so often, and we appealed to God on 3 occasions, and God said, just take it, and I'll buck up, right? So, you know, there are these questions from the recent activity that appears to be blossoming from the demonic world. So what do people in the church do who have that kind of abuse that isn't related to past?
I don't know any abuse that's not related to the past, number one. Number two, there are certain limits I have. I try to work with our... So when I come to a question I can't answer, I point. We've got... Northwest is blessed with a very good cadre of ministers. You've gone out of the counseling area, which I am more than qualified to handle, and gone into a ministerial area, which I am decidedly not. But we have a wonderful cadre of ministers, not only one we have here, but others, okay? And that's where I would have to refer you, because I respect you, okay? That I'm not that intelligent. I'm not being called to do that. I do not have that kind of knowledge. So I'll just...
You got a red number sitting over there. You got a little red picture. Can I say white hair? Green hair? Yes. Well, you know, demon activity is a totally different situation. And I don't think God expects anyone to put up with that. I don't think God expects anyone to put up with other types of abuse either, because God calls to peace. That's the first reason. There are ways of dealing with that. As Mr. Scruggs said, it's not immediate, although the demons, it can be immediate. I've had people come up to me face to face bigger than I am, which is not saying much in terms of girth, but I'm pretty big. Approached me ready to, I don't know to what, but I just said, I command you in the name of Jesus Christ, stop, and he froze. Demons have to obey God, they fear the name of Jesus Christ, and I would suggest first and foremost you need talk to your pastor if you feel that type of activity is taking place. But if you're by yourself, you can use the name of Jesus Christ, and you must have to obey. And you have to believe that, know that. You have the record of the scriptures to the gospel accounts. Many, many occasions where documented cases where that's taking place. And you actually have more power available through Jesus Christ as a demon than you do to be. Human beings have three more ways. Demons don't. They have to obey the name of Jesus Christ. If you won that victory in this right ministry. So, by all means, if you have time, do call pastor, elder, and we usually try to have at least a couple of us together running one-on-one. But that's almost like, in fact, that may be where the secret word came from, a magic word, because people are very impressed seeing that take place. I've seen it from my own eyes, and I know it, I believe it, and I trust and hope and pray. Not that you've seen it, but that you believe it. But if you have seen it, I'm sure that's convincing that you've seen it.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
You said there were three possible reactions to abuse: denial, diminution, and I didn't get the third one. I can't see that.
Well, let's see what we got here. Ah, yes, my personal favorite, transference. And that means people will get mad at me. Which is okay. Don't mind it at all. If it's part of it, you know, I'll say, you know, you've been abused and you're not admitted. No, I haven't. Okay. All right. But they're all to service one thing. Pain control. They all have that as a motive. To control the person's pain. It's all about pain control. That's where the alcohol comes in. So, in my own case, you know, I've talked to Larry about that and felt, I'm sorry, Mr. Walker, not Larry, Mr. Walker, but I've talked to him about that. He's given me some very good advice, okay, based on the ministerial principles. Questions? Yes, Penny.
This is not a question, it is a statement. If you deny child abuse, it will be in your mind, and it will come back to bite you in the end. So, I'm 63 years old. It will come back to get you.
Yes, as we started out by saying, You can forget the past. The past simply will not forget you. Yes, ma'am.
Would you just discuss the subject of transferring humans' abuse to transferring it to God?
Well, yes, because we depend on God for protection. Ultimately, God is responsible for everything. He is guilty for nothing. There's two different words, and in English language, we often confuse the two. Responsibility, which means I have control of the situation. I'm the master of the universe in this case. And then there's guilt. I did that, and I feel bad about it. Well, God never has that. He just has the responsibility, but he knows what he's doing. Yes, sir?
Is alcohol one of the symbols of abuse?
It is one of the symptoms of how people handle abuse. Yes, sir?
Do you cover the idea of transference again?
Where when we take our anger and our hurt and our suffering and transfer it to somebody else, usually inappropriately. It can be to the therapist. It can be to a person's minister, can be to the church. We've lost members who've done that. Would you attest to that, Mr. Walker?
Yeah, basically taking out your anger at someone else.
Yeah. Huh? Exactly. And it serves a type of pain control. You are the repository of all my suffering. Well, maybe, maybe not. I love for it to happen to me because I can deal with it in session. And that's fairly productive. But to blame God, I wouldn't bother. Yes, ma'am.
What about those that practice self-abuse?
Cutters are both tremendously complex and tremendously simple. What are they trying to do? Say that louder, sir. What are they trying to do? Relieve the pain. There's just so much pain that I need to expunge. I deserve a certain amount of pain. Luckily for us, there's a very low correlation between cutters and suicides. It is not an indication of suicide. It can happen, but it's a very low correlation. So when you see somebody cutting themselves, you know they're thinking, I've got just so much pain I've got to get rid of. And I want to achieve that. Then I'm going to feel better. There's a relief. If we have any cutters in the room, you know the relief you can get from that. I took mine by the bottle. Some others take theirs by the razor blade. But it's to get to that relief. Yes, sir.
Yeah, by example, can you tell us what brought you back to the table?
Yes, very easily. God's unfathomable mercy. I know I'm not that smart. It was somehow God called me through divine revelation. I'm not that smart. If I'd have sat around waiting for me to figure it out, it'd been a long Tuesday afternoon. Yes, ma'am.
Any addictive personality is considered trying to deal with pain.
Yeah. I can't say that. I can say the majority of people I have dealt with at some point along the way are looking for ways to relieve their pain. Being good enough. I'm going to show you one more little drawing. It's what I usually end up with in any event. I hope you can see this from back there. Some of you have seen this in session. Salvador Dali should have been so good. Can everybody see that? For those on the audio, I've put a teeter-totter, and I put somebody, one person, right in the middle. What is the advantage of standing right in the middle of a teeter-totter?
Balance.
Abuse will almost assure that we move away from balance. And we do it let's say, in two directions. Let me bring up the idea of a certain type of abuse. A young girl is abused. They will often either become very promiscuous themselves or become absolutely incapable of sharing that wonderful gift in a nurturing relationship. But whatever it is, it ain't balance. Okay? So keep that teeter-totter in mind when you're looking for behaviors that are self-destructive. The one thing that abuse steals from us is balance. Did you have a question, Terry?
Make a comment that I've all my life tried to stay in balance, because you lose your balance, you lose your control.
Well, this is not losing it. It's having it stolen from you. See, you're not even aware of it. All I want, you're making decisions, and it takes somebody to point it. This is could be the beauty of a therapist, or the need for a therapist, to turn back and say, does that make sense? And you have to say, well, no, but at the time, it sure seemed to. So, there again, it's a matter of semantics, but a very important semantics. It's not that you've lost it or given it away or anything. It was stolen from you in the cases we're talking about.
Let's get knocked off balance.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Do you find that people who tend to be highly perfectionistic and exacting tend to be looking upon others in a condescending way and being verbally abused because of that?
I find that there is a segment of the perfectionist population who are trying to be that good person and trying to eschew all evil so they can earn something which they cannot earn, the end of their suffering. And they will try to be perfect in every way and then say, where's the payoff? The payoff never comes. Okay? Okay, Penny, last question. After two or three questions, I won't take any more from that person. If you got any more questions after that, please come and see me. I'll be glad to talk to you.
I just wanted to make an explanation. Sometimes people that come from abusive homes just want to become invisible.
Yes.
Which is what I did.
You have a question, sir. Come see me afterwards. And about third question, I tend to move it on because at that point I see I need to talk to you. Any more? Been a wonderful audience. What I've done is imperfect because our knowledge of the subject is imperfect. And in an hour I couldn't give it to you anyway. So I thank you very, very much. Enjoy your triumphs. Trust God. Enjoy the feast. Good afternoon.